everybody, and welcome back to another year of Hollywood Knockbusters. I don't know why, I just totally forgot the name for a second, but it happens. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and sorry, last year we only did three episodes, and I was like, I'll bring it back this year, because we got a lot more content we're trying to get done. And I asked a friend of mine here, can you please introduce yourself?
Hello, my name's MJ Dixon. I'm a filmmaker from the United Kingdom. That's probably all you need to know about me. I guess I'm a big fan of the movie we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, it's really funny. So we were just chatting about it earlier. I had put out a Facebook post asking if anybody wanted to come on the show, and MJ was the first one to hit me up. And I hit him up about the particular movie. I didn't say what movie we were doing, so I just mentioned, like, would you like to do Super Mario Brothers? Had no idea that he actually, this is like, what, your favorite movie?
Well, no, I wouldn't say it's my favorite movie of all time, but it's definitely on the list. It's, I would say, it's 100% in the top 20.
In top 20, okay.
Yeah, easily.
All right, good. Oh, awesome. I wouldn't go that far to put it up that high on my list, but there's so many movies out there. It's
maybe
really
I can
hard.
Change your mind today. What? Maybe I can change your mind.
Oh,
today.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll find out. So let's first, I guess one of the things I really like to do to talk about is kind of how we like discovered this film and everything. You said you had a interesting story that involved that. So tell us a little bit about your, like, how did you discover this film? Like, how did it connect with you when you first watched it? That kind of thing.
Well, I mean, I was really, obviously, when I was young, I was really, really into video games. I should say now, which is even weirder, that, like, I'm a Sonic and a Sega guy. Like, that's absolutely, like, been my thing throughout my entire life. Like,
me too.
The Mario versus Sonic thing was, like, huge when I was a kid, and you had to pick a side.
Exactly, but, and I was a Sega guy, too. I used to have the Game Gear. You know,
yeah.
Do you remember the Game Gear?
I do.
Yeah, I used to have that. So I get it.
Yeah, I was mad into Sonic. And Mario didn't... I played the games when I could, but I didn't have a Nintendo. So it tended to be when I was at a friend's house or something like that. And I watched the cartoon. I think I had like a sticker album or something. I had a couple of little Mario toys. But it was never something that really stuck with me. You know, like it wasn't something I was ever like a fan of, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I think in like 1993... We used to go to a place in the Metro Centre, which is like a mall in where I lived when I was a kid. They had like a huge multiplex, which was quite a new thing at the time where we lived. And they had all these posters up for films. And we were going to the cinema with my grandfather. And like when I was a kid, like, because it's weird, you kind of got like, as an adult, you feel like now in kind of today's culture, people got the cinema almost like every week to see something, you know, it's kind of, but back then, like when I was a kid, we only went to the cinema as like a big treat. You know, it was like, there had to be something special out. And I remember going to the cinema and my grandfather said, you have to pick what film it is. So I ran up to the posters, and in the UK, I think Jurassic Park and Super Mario Brothers came out at almost exactly, I think maybe even the same day, but definitely around the same time, a couple
Which
of weeks
is,
out from each
that's
other.
Interesting. I think, because I've heard that Jurassic Park was sort of another reason why Super Mario Brothers like failed at the box office, was because so many people were going to go see the giant dinosaur movie compared to the small dinosaur movie.
In terms of content for Mario, I had no idea that it was going to be about dinosaurs.
Right.
You know the poster, the big M with the two guys standing in front of it. So there was that and the Jurassic Park poster. And I, being like an insane 11-year-old,
this
basically
poster?
Was like, that's the one. me being like an insane 11-year-old, I was stood there looking at these two posters and went, well, we've got to see Super Mario Brothers. Like, we have to, you know. So my grandfather quite rightly said, I think we'll go to see Jurassic Park. And, and in retrospect, a very, very sensible decision. And I really enjoyed Jurassic Park, but it meant that I didn't get to see Super Mario Brothers until it came out on video about a year and a half later. but I absolutely loved it. Like, it was one of those things where by the time I'd got to see it, so many people had said it was terrible. You know, it, like 11-year-olds at school, you know, the same age as me, saying, oh yeah, Super Mario Brothers, really, really bad, terrible, one of the worst films I've ever seen. I was expecting that maybe the absolute worst. So when I finally got to see this thing on kind of big box rental VHS, I adored it. And I always have, I think, ever since. I mean, it's one of those films that it's always been a bad movie. Like, it's not like Masters of the Universe, where I was like, when I was like 30 years old, I was like horrified to discover that people considered that to be a bad movie. you know, but Super Mario Brothers, I've gone through my entire life thinking, you know, everyone thinks it's a bad movie, but I know differently, you know?
Masters of the Universe will be eventually a Hollywood knockbuster for sure. Especially since that's a very much a Beastmaster two, like, you know, I think it came out before Beastmaster 2, so maybe Beastmaster 2 stole the idea, but they're very, if you look at those movies, they're very similar. And yeah, you know, but yeah, I actually had the exact opposite thing. We talked about that earlier, of like, I was probably one of those 11-year-olds that would have told you that the movie was terrible, because I got to see it in the theater. And maybe that was also the problem, is I saw it in the theater. You know, watching it on video, I could see it probably, you know, and I'm pretty sure I had it on video at some point. But I, you know, I mean, only because I adore Nintendo. Like, Nintendo was my first gaming console, you know, right? I think we might have had an Atari for like a little bit, you know, but Nintendo was my console. Like, that was my system, you know, at first. And then Sega came along and just blew that out of the water. And then all these other stuff happened and I got too old and didn't understand any. I don't play video games anymore. I don't have an Xbox.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's a bit too crowded.
Well, yeah, and it's just too much, you know, too expensive, a habit. I mean, collecting DVDs and Blu-rays is enough for me. But anyway, or I do still sometimes collect old school Nintendo games, because I love them. But anyway, I watched this movie. I was like thinking, this is just a terrible version. Like, I didn't think it was anything like the Super Mario Brothers video game, right? You know, I thought, what is up with these two plumbers? They're weird. Like, did you notice how many times they say plumber in the movie? Like
boats.
I know, way too much. And it was just like, I mean, I was like, is that what they think of this movie? Is like, just their, you know, or these characters, like this video game that there's, it's just, they built it like they're plumbers, you know, or whatever.
Like, and a weird bit where they're in a restaurant and it like cuts to like a random close up of like Mario putting loads of Parmesan on his food to kind of go, they're also really Italian.
Right. You know, like Mario and Luigi. Though I do absolutely love the, you know, what's your name? Mario. Last name, Mario. What's your name? Luigi. I'm going to guess. Luigi. No, Luigi Mario. That was like, almost like a Marx Brothers type skit or something.
Yeah. You know? Like, I told someone that recently, that the names were Mario and Luigi Mario, and they thought I was joking. They thought, they thought I was making a joke.
I don't know, because like, Nintendo never said that. Like, that was never, you know, don't look at the, like, the, whenever you pick Luigi, it doesn't say Luigi Mario on it, right? It just says Luigi. So Nintendo's never come out and said,
no, but that I take that as canon always.
Now, forever. Now, because it's been in the movie and everything.
Ooh. Absolutely. I accept that fully as canon forever now.
Okay. All right. I guess that's the way it is. But it makes sense, because they are the Mario Brothers, right?
Yeah.
Which pissed me off rewatching this today, because they had a chance to make that stick, right? But they go, Mario brought me up. He's like a father to me. And I'm like, damn it, why didn't they say brother? because that would have been like a perfect thing of, and they are the Mario brothers.
He says he was my mom and my father and my brother, and he says all that stuff, I guess. But I, the intimation is kind of that Mario, like, kind of was his only family, and being his older brother, I guess, kind of dragged him up, you know, like the only way he could, I guess, is the way I took it.
Yeah. So from what I've understood from the background of this movie, and there's a fantastic YouTube breakdown of this movie. I don't know if you saw that or not, but I should have sent it to you. But there's a...
It was one I was going to watch. I have watched the hour-long documentary about it that's on the Blu-ray. So that's... Okay.
Well, on YouTube, there's a... there's a Blu-ray? Is that?
Oh, yeah. Well, mate, I don't know whether you guys have it. It got released. I bought it last March because for some reason my DVD had gone walkabout. So I thought I can't not have a copy of Super Mario Brothers in the house. So I looked and there was a Blu-ray out. So I thought I'll have that instead. And it's got an hour-long documentary called Game Over, The Making of Super Mario Brothers.
It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. It's really good. Very, very in-depth as well.
I'm pissed that you guys get everything. Like... either before we get it or period. Sometimes you guys get stuff that we don't even get and everything.
Oh yeah,
I need to
you guys got Guns Akimbo for like a whole year, but we've only just got it, I think.
Which one?
Guns Akimbo, the Daniel.
Oh yeah, yeah. Movie,
like that everybody wanted to see, but we haven't had it yet. So.
Oh wow. Well, there you go. So I guess we're taking things from you guys too.
There we go.
but no, it's so. Yeah, that kind of and irritates me because America needs a Blu-ray of this. Like, they need to be like, what are the companies like? Like Shout Factory should do. You know, should do Super Mario Brothers. I mean, I guarantee you, it would be a big hit. you know, but I mean, I guess that just depends on like, you know, is there an audience for it necessarily?
I think so. I think it's remembered.
Yeah,
much worse than it really is.
Yeah, I agree. I think people think of it like, oh man, this is a terrible movie, and if they rewatch it, I don't know, like it's actually a lot better than I remember it being. And it's very, and when I said earlier that it was not like the video game, it is very much the video game. Except I was kind of disappointed. Now, if they were to redo it today, like reboot it and make it today, I guarantee you Big Bertha would not be a big woman. Big Bertha would be back to being the fish.
Well, I mean, I think this has always been my argument about Super Mario Brothers when people go, it's nothing like the games. And I think, but the games weren't about anything. I mean, I know there's some vague story. It's very much like the Sonic stuff, where when they turned it into cartoons, they kind of really had to make it, they had to build something from scratch, you know, you know, pardon the pun. But, you know, they had to build something they kind of built like Robotnik in his dark empire and all that kind of stuff. And Mario Brothers is really very much the same. Is like, if you break it down, it really is just a plumber running around bouncing on, you know, I mean, I know there's some story elements to it. I realized that Yoshi, he was introduced in Super Mario World, which is the Super Nintendo one. So he must have been around, that game must have been around when they adapted it.
1989, I believe, is when Super Mario World came out.
Right, okay.
Or so, yeah, so because... Also, if you think about it, also was the other one, not just Yoshi, but also Princess Daisy was not.
Yeah, well, she's from Super Mario Land for the Game Boy.
That's true.
Because originally, like, it's like Japanese to American translation is really weird. So it's a little bit like Dr. Eggman became Dr. Robotnik. And I think at one point, Princess Peach and Princess Daisy were the same character. And then over the years, they've kind of split them into like two characters. I could be completely wrong on that. I mean, my Mario knowledge in terms of games is not very good.
When I always thought in the first Mario Brothers movie, and I could be wrong, and you can correct me if you think this is wrong, but I always thought that Princess Toadstool.
Well, she's called Princess Peach Toadstool, which is where the confusion comes from.
Right. Because
in Mario Brothers 2, the game, she was called Princess Toadstool, at least in the UK version. I don't know.
Right, I think it was in the American version too.
But she's called Princess Peach Toadstool, and then Princess Daisy is a character. The way they differentiate them now is that one has blonde hair and one has brown hair. I don't know that because I played Mario Kart for the Nintendo DS, and they were two separate characters. And they look different now, but it used to be that basically they were just kind of an interchangeable princess. And I don't know why they called her Daisy in Super Mario Land. I mean, I'm sure there's like some Mario aficionado out there who will know exactly why.
Hey, leave us a comment. We're okay with that. And if we're wrong in any of our stuff that we say,
we definitely will be.
Yeah, because I said 1989. I think I meant 1989 for the Super Mario Land. The one you were talking about that on the Game Boy.
Right, okay.
So Super Mario World, I always thought that maybe they created Yoshi and then brought him.
I think it was a little bit like, So I think he was kind of like a brand new addition to the Mario world at the time, if you know what I mean.
Well,
in terms of the games.
This season, I'm also going to be doing The Wizard, you know, which is.
Oh, wow. Nintendo.
Yeah, which is going to be funny to do another Nintendo thing, but, you know, I guess that can be a somewhat of a theme. But yeah, The Wizard was basically their attempt at Nintendo attempting to basically be one big fucking commercial, right?
And everything. The Power Glove?
The Power Glove, they had the Power... That scene, and I'm going to talk about it on the thing, but that scene with them going, the Power Glove, it's so bad. It's just like, that was such a cart. That was a commercial. You know, I wanted them to go, the Power Glove by Nintendo. Like right after.
Is when I think of the Power Glove, I always think of Nightmare on Elm Street 6.
Ah, yeah.
Like every time I think of the Power Glove, I never think of any of the commercial stuff they did to advertise it. I always think of that moment where Freddy's like, now I'm playing with power.
Yeah.
And you start pressing the thing. And that's always what it reminds me of.
And then the funniest thing with that is like it was his claw too, right? It was still his claw as the glove. And so I'm like thinking, why didn't Nintendo jump on that and like make a Freddy power glove? Absolutely. You know?
Exactly. Like, they had the Nightmare on Street game as well. So there's cross promotion.
Right. I mean, and you know that the New Line and Freddy, they just loved merchandising, you know, opportunities like, you know, whatever. But anywho, they introduced Super Mario Brothers 3 in that, you know, that was like also their big like reveal, you know, like no kid, you know, until you saw that movie, you know, you didn't know that there was a Super Mario Brothers 3 actually coming out. Then you watched it as a kid going, oh my God, I want that. And you got to see a sneak peek at what, you know, basically what that game was about, you know, and whatnot. And I thought that was so cool. Like that was like, Nintendo was very smart. Then they made Super Mario Brothers and it tanked. Then they made Double Dragon and it tanked, you know?
Well, it's weird. Double Dragon is, I was thinking about this today, is so similar to this movie, like, that it's nuts. Like, when I really thought about it, I was like, yeah. Like, so Super Mario Brothers is considered by most people to be a terrible movie. And then Double Dragon's like a worse version of it.
Yeah. Exactly.
I quite like Double Dragon as well. It's not good at all,
but it has its moments.
I'm a massive Cast Cost fan, so that really helps it. Such a good actor.
In our last season, we did Only the Strong, which...
Oh, man, so good. The Capoeira movie.
Yeah, yeah. And so back in the day, I huge Mark Dacascos fan, and I actually sent him a... back in those days in the like 90s or late 90s, you could actually just look on people's online and find people's like mailing addresses to, you know, or whatnot, fan clubs and stuff. And so I sent one to, I sent an email to Mark, and his, you know, a website. And he sent me a, he sent me something back with a picture signed to Jonathan, Aloha, Mark Dacascos, you know?
And it's amazing.
I thought that was like awesome. And so he's always been like, and I know people have worked with him. I'm friends with people who work with him, and they've all said nothing but nice things about him.
He just seems like a really nice guy. He's on like my top three list of people to work with.
If you can do that, I would love to be a part of that too, because I absolutely adore him. I had an idea of him and Sasha Mitchell together, and you know, fighting each other, you know, like evil and good, you know, and stuff. So I'm a huge like martial arts guy too. Like I,
yeah, same.
So anyway, to go back to Super Mario Brothers, which
of course.
That's how then generally speaking, I will get off track. So that's just me.
Yeah, exactly the same.
This is going to be a crazy episode then. but yeah, so go back to Super Mario Brothers. The ways that I feel like the movie really did try to be just like the video game in enough of a way, like they used the plumbing, you know, they used the underground plumbing stuff, you know, them going down the pipes and
when you look at, they had very little to work with in terms of story,
right,
the games, you know what I mean? And when you look at it in that way, like what they came up with is almost too good,
right,
from where it came from, if you know what I mean.
I mean, yeah, the only thing I don't remember after rewatching it today was if they had a scene where somebody jumps on somebody's head and just smushes them. I don't think they did that.
No, but they do. They got, again, the Thwomp Stomper boots.
Yeah.
I'll get to reveal these here. So you can see them on the, they've got them on the figures, but they work in the Thwomp Stomper boots into the show, into the film, so that they can do all the mad jumping at one point. They put so much effort into making, here's Mario and Luigi from the movie.
From the movie, that's awesome.
So yeah. they you can see they've got the boots on and they work those into the film so that they can do the jumping around and all that. And I just, that's a lot of work to make that make sense. And
oh, yeah.
Like that, I mean, it's a weird, it's always a bit of a conflicting movie, really, because I really love it, as obviously I've said. Because of those reasons, because like it feels like the directors really cared about it. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like it felt like they really, really like wanted to make it work and adapt the games in the best way that they possibly could. But then every story I hear about the making of the film is that they're like the whole experience was awful.
Right. I think, so, well, they wanted, from what I've understood, they wanted an adult version of the movie, right? They wanted it to be more adult. Obviously Nintendo / I forgot who put it out, Columbia or somebody, you know.
I can't remember now. I can probably look it up.
TriStar, whatever the company was.
It's out by Pathé here, but they're a fairly new company. Not new, but they've only been around.
Hollywood Pictures, which yeah. I don't think they're around
anymore. I don't think they exist anymore, do they?
Yeah.
No, yeah, they appeared in like the late 90s.
Yeah, so they put this together and they made, they wanted more kids like stuff because it's a video game. They want to like promote it to the kids. So they kind of went in the middle and made like a PG-13 ish, even though it might be PG, but it should be.
Yeah, it's a PG here.
It's PG, but it's like PG-13 really. Like, yeah. I mean, I hate to say it like that. It was, I mean, I don't think today's standard, it would be viewed as a PG movie. But remember Jaws was a PG movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that is a PG-13 movie if I've ever seen one. So, but to go back to what they were doing was they were trying to make something that was that, and they were kind of caught in the middle of doing it all the while. Like, people weren't happy. Bob Hoskins was not happy shooting this. He was reportedly drunk on set a lot, you know. Dennis Hopper was only doing this for his to buy his son shoes, and then when he told his son that, he was like, I didn't need shoes that badly, Dad. You know, stuff like that that I've heard. And I think it's just funny because just nobody really, you know, nobody took it. I don't think anybody but maybe the directors took it seriously enough, you know. Yeah. Like Mario,
I think that's a real thing.
Yeah, it is.
I was saying the other day to some friends of mine that, like, for me, it's a real big shame that, because this was a movie that introduced me to people like Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo and Dennis Hopper, because I was like 11 years old. I didn't watch right. the kind of stuff that they usually made. So
John Leguizamo, I don't think, was even a big name then.
No, well, this was his first movie. But, I mean, between this and Spawn and, you know, him going on to do Land of the Dead and Romeo and Juliet and...
The Pest.
Yeah. The Pest, oh, God.
Which, unfortunately, will not be a Hollywood knockbuster, only because it's just that bad, like, nobody even likes it. Like,
yeah, well, I mean, no one's even, like, you know, it's so obscure.
Well, I also remember going to because of Super Mario and because of Romeo and Juliet and stuff. Maybe it was before Romeo and Juliet that The Pest came out. I remember going with my friend Crystal to go see this movie. Like, we came in. We were the only ones in The Pest, like, I think, or so. Maybe there might have been, like, one other person that came in, you know, or whatever. And we were just like, this is crazy. Like, you know, like, nobody's here. It was like opening day. Nobody was there in the theater.
I haven't thought about it in probably about 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a movie that, like, you know, kind of launched his career or anything. Anything, it stopped his career for a little bit. And
well, I think people only saw it because, you know, he had a small fan base at that point.
Right. And that was the thing. Like, he had me. I was a fan base of him as Luigi. Because even though I didn't like the movie, I still thought he did, you know, he was actually the best part of the movie. And I still say that, like.
Yeah, no, I think, yeah, definitely have to agree. He is the heart of the film.
He is. And, but see, they kind of made the character that way, you know. Yeah. I feel like they shortchanged Mario. Maybe that's another reason why Bob Hoskins feels like he sort of phoned it in a little bit, you know, in my opinion. I feel like he sort of. He doesn't give like 100% compared to like,
yeah,
John.
Thinking about it, he is very much a secondary character in the film.
Yeah, it's all about Luigi. Like, Luigi gets Daisy. Like,
yeah. But Mario gets what I'm assuming is supposed to be Peach. He's got a girlfriend, she gets kidnapped.
Right, but that's not Peach, is it?
Well, I don't think they ever say it is, but in my mind, she's called. What's she called? I think is it Daniela?
Daniela or something, yeah.
I always thought that she was supposed to be Peach.
I don't think the only reason
just very kind of loosely, any kind of.
Well, he has to find her, but she's not a princess. That's the thing. That's the whole idea. Is she's not the princess. Remember, they say that they're looking for a princess, and none of us fit the bill. So they're looking for Daisy. And so I think if they ever reboot this or remake it in some way or another, which I think they will at some point. I mean, it's not, I wouldn't be surprised. If they ever do that, they definitely should make both Princess Daisy and Princess Peach together, you know, being kidnapped by King. Well, is it King Koopa or is it Bowser? Now, this is another
confusing thing as well. So, King Koopa, again, I could be completely wrong, but so Bowser and Koopa have always been separate characters in my mind because in the cartoon, Koopa is like a kind of lizard kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. But
then Bowser's like this big, kind of like big cheeked,
yeah,
like a kind of dragon thing. you know. But I guess in the games, are they supposed to be the same person? It's very, very confusing. But again, I'm not a massive Mario game fan, so I don't know the ins and outs of it.
Yeah, he looks more like a dragon. I'm sure that will.
Yeah, so that's
but and that's Bowser. And
that's
then
Bowser. Yeah, so and then Koopa is
and he's a king
he's
too.
He's more like green, he's got a little crown on.
He's supposed to be a king, and then they call him President Cooper, which I didn't like.
And that was in the cartoon. King Koopa, he's like a green, like lizard-looking guy.
I don't want the Brothers movie. I just want Super Mario Brothers. Yeah, he's... He looks a little bit similar, except for the head.
Okay, yeah, that's not... I mean, I maybe it's just interpretations of the same character, perhaps.
Yeah, see, this is Bowser. And then you look at the next... And it's the same character.
Kind of, yeah. But I mean, you could stand them next to each other and they'd look different, wouldn't they?
I guess. I mean, enough where they could play like, I guess they could be like brothers or something,
I'm wondering if it's like a Dr. Robotnik, Dr. Eggman situation where it's, again, the translation is not quite accurate, if you know what I mean.
I would like to do some more research on that at some point. You know, and figure that stuff out because.
Well, King Koopa, it was how I knew him because in the cartoons, that was what he was called. And so that made sense that King Koopa would be the bad guy in the movie.
Right. And he was. He was definitely the bad guy. He had a lot of pizzazz. I liked Dennis Hopper. I think. My favorite line, obviously, is his probably his most famous is "evil egg sucking son of a snake," you know. And I was like, "That's just a great like." I could see kids saying that to their friends, like, "I'm an evil egg sucking son of a snake," you know, or whatever, or whatnot. But
there's a bit in it where he's like, "Get me those plumbers," and I thought. Is that like a riff on, because I don't know if you remember in the Sonic cartoon, it was like, I hate that hedgehog kind of thing. And I always thought, is that like a stab at that? Like,
I don't know.
Did he have a catchphrase? Like, I can't remember the cartoons particularly well these days, but I remember the Sonic one. And I always thought, is that like a stab at the Sonic version of that? Which was like a famous catchphrase from the cartoon.
Did that actually come out around the same time or after?
I think the Sonic cartoon was probably about a year before the film came out, the first iteration.
So the first film came out in 93. So...
Yeah, so the Sonic cartoon was 92, I think. Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Maybe.
So, yeah.
Maybe it was.
Be. It could be. There's loads of weird stuff in the film where he keeps... he's obsessed with
93. So it was the same time.
Oh, right. So maybe not. I don't know. It just always seemed like a weird addition to the film because it's kind of at odds with everything else he's done as well. But maybe, like you said, it's this just desperation to go, they're plumbers. Please remember that they're plumbers.
Right. Which is, I mean, like we said, they reiterate that like a few times. So it becomes sort of monotonous of like, I guess they're just trying to make sure we know, you know. And then
that becomes a running joke eventually, doesn't it? Is like, there's some plumbers over there, get those plumbers, you know. And I guess they kind of think that's funny, which I guess it kind of is.
To kids maybe, you know, especially because I mean plumbers is a terrible job to a kid. Like, a kid would not want to be a plumber. Like, no kid ever says, you know, what do you want to be when I grow up? I want to be a plumber. You know, that's not, you know, like, people want to say doctor, lawyer, actually probably not even lawyer, doctor, a veterinarian, something, you know, something
astronaut,
like that,
you know.
Astronaut, something that like seems like it's a hero kind of thing. Plumbing later on in life, they realize that is a freaking hero kind of thing because everybody needs one. As opposed to like an astronaut, you know, because, you know, we can't really it, that doesn't help us in our day-to-day life, right? Being an astronaut, that kind of person, but being a plumber definitely does. So maybe this movie was trying to get people more to like want to be plumbers. You know?
Oh, you think it, like The Wiz was advertising the Power Glove? This was advertising a career in plumbing. in water engineering.
Yes, exactly. Well, I mean, if you look at it, how much of it is plumbing? Because like, there's a lot of movie like scenes where they're like plugging stuff up or setting things off, you know.
But they work it into the story really well.
Right.
That's the first thing. And then like the bit, you know, where like they've tried to where the Scapellis are flooding the dig or whatever.
Right.
And he runs all the way home to tell Mario rather than just phoning him and saying, "Hey Mario, can you come down here? That would be way quicker." He runs all the way home and goes, "Mario, we need your help." Just so he can grab the bag and go, "We're going to business. Doing some plumbing. It's plumbing time," or whatever he says. But that bit where they're working together and he's like, "Pass me a 1G, 12 inch," and he's like, and they're doing that and he goes hand and he pulls him up and it's all really well choreographed. And I think, they're doing this really well, you know, and that does a few things. It makes plumbing look kind of like, you know, like
an exciting, he's a fireman or something, exciting job, you know, which I mean, it still to this day, I don't like, you know, because I have to, obviously, as an adult, I have to do some plumbing at times or whatever. I don't enjoy it, you know, myself. I would rather have somebody come in and fix I'd rather have the Mario Brothers. And then you got the Capellis or whatever, which I don't think that was ever those aren't characters that were,
the film being made a bit later, they would have been the Wario Brothers. But I think they should have made the Scapellis canon in the games. And instead of having the Warios, they should have had the Scapelli Brothers be the evil plumbers in the games going forward.
Had the movie done well enough, I think that might have been a thing.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the movie really didn't catch on, and that's another reason why it's on Hollywood Knockbusters, is because it bombed at the box office, terrible, and people, like you said, all your friends were telling you this is terrible, don't watch the movie, right?
Yeah.
You know, all your friends were saying that, so it was one of those things where everybody fucking hated it, and then the movie went nowhere, but then like all of a sudden video and whatnot, people started to like see it, and even years later I think it really started to catch on where people could really respect it for what it is. And I like, even me to this day, like now I watch it, I go, this is actually not as bad as I remembered as a kid. Like I thought this was, like rewatching it when I bought it on DVD for $5 at Walmart, you know, I was like, this is like, you know, terrible, right? And and then I realized all the $5 movies that are definitely Hollywood Knockbusters, but they are actually damn good movies. Like Spice World, that was actually a really good movie.
I like, because I'm English or British, I've had enough of the Spice Girls to last me a lifetime,
right? Like, I think you got it worse than we did in the States, but
yeah, like I mean, like, well, they're all based on they're all stereotypes of our culture, I guess, really, and they're awful, really awful. I loved the Spice Girls when I was a kid, I guess, but
well, me and a special guest will be doing the Spice World movie, so you don't have to. We don't have God to have you come on for that one, you know.
Is it Richard E. Grant? And Meatloaf are in it, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, I think so. I think Meatloaf's
their bus driver, I think. And yeah. Richard E. Grant's their tour manager, I think.
Yeah.
Very vague memories.
It's been a while since I've even watched it.
They did a sequel, though, like Spice World, but it was like Spice World, like it was Mad Max or something like that. And that, you know, there was giant worms like off Dune or something. I could get on board with that, maybe.
Okay, you write that movie and then sell it to the Spice Girls.
I might, you know, that would be.
I mean,
that would be quite something.
They'd obviously want somebody British to write it, you know. You know, so there you go. It's one of those movies that was in the $5 bin that I'm like, this is actually perfect for this. So, I mean, there's a ton of them that we're going to be doing, but so I gave you guys a sneak peek. We are going to be doing Spice World later in The Wizard. So you already know a couple of the movies that are going to be coming out this season. So get ready for that. Let us know what you guys think of those. But Super Mario Brothers, I wanted this to be first back because it's one of those films that, like, you even said it earlier before we did the show, that you could sense it. You know, when I mentioned the type of movies that we do, Super Mario Brothers is like the top, like,
probably. You know, when I saw your post, that's what made me comment on it, is you said, we're going to be doing, I wanted to do a show about, we want to bring back our show about, you know, films that bombed at the box office, but were pretty good. And I thought,
pretty good, or just had like a following, really. Because it doesn't actually, because, like, I don't know, like, some of them probably might not be the greatest movies of all time. That's why they bombed at the box office. However, people love them for whatever reason it is. And, you know, this movie was, this movie is one of those types of movies because, at the time it didn't do very well. But later it really formed a cult following.
Well, it did, so much so that, I don't know whether you know this, but someone wrote and made a comic book sequel to it.
Oh.
And it exists. It's online. I read it. It's amazing. It's so, I mean, one of the best things about Mario Brothers, one of my favorite things, is that moment where Daisy bursts in at the end. She's like, guys, you're not going to believe this. You know, like, and then the film just finishes. And I was like, oh, like, there's got to be a sequel, right?
Right.
And there never was. You know, and so, eventually, I only found this out a couple of years ago, somebody did a sequel in the form of a comic book that continues it. And I'm fairly certain I can't remember the name of the character now, but, you know, the bird that blows eggs out of its mouth.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what that character's name.
They set that character up as the villain, or one of the villains in it. And then I'm sure it's King Toad or something like that from Mario 2 is the bad guy. But it's great. And, you know, it's kind of all about Daisy trying to rebuild the kingdom after everything that happened with Cooper. And they never finished it, as far as I know. I haven't checked it for a while, but they were uploading like about 3 or 4 pages every month. Oh. And then there was a big gap. So I don't know whether it's ever been finished or anything.
Oh,
but
wow.
It was incredible. I blasted everything, you know, that they'd already had up there. And it's really good. And when I read it, I felt like it's a real shame that this movie didn't go anywhere, because like the storytelling potential is incredible.
Well, yeah, well, because once again, you have a Super Mario World, you know? So you have this whole universe where you could see one of my favorite shows that I ever grew up. I don't know if you guys had it or not, but pretty sure you did if you had all these. There was a show called Captain N, the Game Master. I don't know if you've ever seen that or whatever. But in Captain N, it was like cartoons, right? You know, mainly cartoons. But the kid got sucked into the video game world, the Nintendo world. And I always thought of that. Like, I always wanted a feature-length version of that. Like, I wanted a Nintendo World movie, you know. In fact, I wrote ideas down of Nintendo World, where you got to meet all the, you know, Kid Icarus and Simon Belmont and, you know, Link. And
Mega Man was in it, I think.
Which one?
Mega Man.
Mega Man, I think Donkey Kong was in it at some point.
Yeah, I vaguely remember. And then was it the bad guy was?
Is it Mother,
Mother Mind or something?
Mother, Mother Brain.
Yeah, from Metroid.
And he was voiced Oh my God, I never noticed this when I was first watched it, but I rewatched it because it was on YouTube or whatever at some point. So I rewatched it, and it's voiced by Audrey Two from Little Shop of Horrors. Yeah, so rewatch that. You'll hear it when he talks, because he'll be like, yes, you know, right? He has this like, I can't even do the voice, but he has this like crazy voice, like, you know, in Little Shop of Horrors, where he's like, but I'm starving, you know, yeah. Right? If you listen to that, and then watch the thing, the way he like expresses himself is exactly the same way. And I love it. It's just like, it's like having Audrey too play a cartoon character, you know, or whatever. Amazing. And so it's great. But what I always wanted that, like, I wanted either a Captain N movie feature length with, like, you know, it could be CGI or whatever, or a, or all cartoon again, you know, but as a movie, you know, like, or you could bring it back as a TV show, but I think the problem is it'd have to work as a movie first, because the TV show hasn't existed for so long that nobody would care, you know, to reboot it. But if you reboot it as a movie, I guarantee, especially a live action one, I guarantee you people would like fucking go nuts. You, me, and you could have all the new characters from all the new Nintendo stuff, right? But could you imagine like Q-Bert, you know, could you imagine like jumping down those things or whatever, having somebody be jumping down those stuff with Q-Bert following him, you know, like, I mean, just so much cool stuff you could do these days.
Yeah.
And you could bring Mario and Luigi into this world. And this is what I think Marvel is so great at. And I've talked about this on many, many podcasts and stuff. So Marvel's really good at just introducing characters and then having them do like little spin-off like movies or shows or whatever, right? So that would be great for Nintendo. Like, why hasn't Nintendo done that yet?
Like, I know what you mean. If they did Captain N first and then kind of, then you could introduce the characters as in terms of like as a springboard almost. And then
actually I would have Captain N first. And then kind of each the first movie be Captain N, but introduce somebody else, then they get their own movie, then they introduce somebody else in their movie, and that person, like, people don't know how to do this necessarily, I feel like. And so the movies kind of bomb because they spend way too much money on it when it doesn't need, like The Mummy with Tom Cruise. Yeah. Failed because it cost, I mean, it was a great movie, by the way. I actually really liked it.
I get, in retrospect, it's more fun than I first gave it credit for, I think.
Right. But yeah, it could have done better had it not spent so much money on it, you know. So then they give it to Blumhouse, and then they decide they're gonna do the Invisible Man and make the Invisible Man a bad guy, which I'm like, he was never a bad guy. Like, this is, what are you doing? You guys, like, yeah. Every single time they try to do something cool like this, they're ruining it, you know?
Okay. Like, well, the trouble is they didn't learn their lesson first time when they did Dracula Untold. And they spent so much money making like a historical, like 300 style epic with Dracula. Right. And then they spent too much money and it bombed. And they said, well, I know what we'll do. We'll do exactly the same again, but this time we'll put Tom Cruise in it, and that'll work. I mean, for the record, I really like the new Invisible Man, but I guess, I don't know. I'd say I really like the film Hollow Man.
Yeah.
And so it kind of felt like more like that direction.
Right.
What I like about it is not even the fact that he's an invisible man, really. It's more, I've forgotten her name. Is Elizabeth
Moss? It's Elizabeth Moss's character, yeah.
Is what it does for her character, I think, in terms of, it's not so much the monster, but it's how the monster affects the character.
An abusive relationship.
And I think that's the horror in it, I guess.
I know, but like, I don't know. I feel like that's a completely
the same frustration. I think.
I think if they called it something else, you know, like had it be about a guy who could become invisible, you know, or whatever, and not call it the Invisible Man, I would have loved it a lot more. But unfortunately, it was an Invisible Man. H.G. Wells would be like rolling his eyes, yeah. Like, because it wasn't his creation. This was completely different. And like, then this is why we get the Lady Ghostbusters movie, is because people think we need something different to spice things up. And the problem is, if you take somebody who like really enjoys that stuff and just makes, I mean, I guess anybody can make an Invisible Man movie because it's public domain book, you know.
Weirdly enough, I wrote one last year.
Oh, there you go. Maybe you'll make it, you know.
Maybe. He's a good guy in that, if that helps you.
Right, see? And that's, I mean, and I'm not saying that needs to be that way, you know. But I'm just saying, like, I feel like that kind of, I feel like it kind of killed it, because I was like, more, like, what they tried to do was bring back the horror aspect of it, which I really loved, because The Mummy was not horror. It was action. And it was basically another reincarnation from the Mummy that Brendan Fraser was doing, which was action. So they were trying to basically, and I was like, why are they going to do, like, as their first dark universe movie, bring The Mummy, you know, like, why not do a one that, you know? And that's why the Blumhouse guys did, that's why they ended up doing The Invisible Man, is because if they had done The Mummy again, I would have like, nope, I wouldn't have even watched it.
Well, I think also they took one that, like, I think Universal were like, oh, nobody wants to do that. Well, if you want to do that, like, nobody else is interested, kind of thing.
And now they're doing Renfield, and they're doing like The Wolfman.
Yeah.
Which is great, but they're not having any of them like meet together. They're not, it's not going to be.
Well, no, I mean, I guess it's early days yet. And I think the global pandemic's kind of messed it all up a little bit. Cause I think Invisible Man was like the last film, one of the last films I saw at the cinema before.
Yeah.
Before all this stuff kicked off. So I guess we'll see what happens when everything starts to kind of go back to normality.
Well, from what I've understood, they did not want them all to connect. They wanted all of them to be individual stories, is what I've heard from Blumhouse. So if that's the case, it's kind of sad, because they have these chances to make these kind of cool.
Yeah. You know. I think the biggest travesty of Invisible Man for me was that at the end, they didn't have the song Invisible Man by Queen playing over the credits. And I was like,
there's like, an opportunity.
The tone of the end of the movie is perfect for it. I thought you could just start that song as she's walking away, and I thought, oh, that would have been, go on, give me Queen, Invisible Man, and they didn't.
Maybe that wasn't in their budget, you know.
Yeah, maybe. Because, I mean, but I feel like if you've got Elizabeth Moss, you can throw some money.
I don't know, because like the Blumhouse has a specific budget, you know. They try to keep it as low as possible, which is what you need to do for these things. So if they do a Super Mario Brothers movie, don't make it a multi-million dollar, you know, make it like $5 million, right? I mean, that's all they need. $5 million, get three leads, you know, two guys and a girl, you know, right? Or so, or maybe four, if you want to do Princess Daisy, Princess, you know, Peach together, you know, right? Make that be, or, and King Cooper. So five people that have to have some kind of known, you know, be some kind of known person. Then take it to a, you know, a small like step for it. But you can do everything CGI now. You can do everything green screen, you know.
Well, that's the other thing I wanted to talk about. Mario Brothers is, so it came out in 1993. I mean, so the CG revolution really happened the same week that Mario Brothers came out with Jurassic Park. And what I appreciate the most about Super Mario Brothers is the physicality of it, is like the craftsmanship to the special effects, to the set design, to the, you know, the puppetry of like Yoshi, like all that stuff is, I think, what makes it amazing. Mm-hmm. Like, did you know that? So to build the set, it already kind of existed. What they did is they rented an abandoned cement factory, and they built the whole of, is it called Dinotopia?
Dinotopia, yeah.
They built the whole of that, the Mushroom Kingdom, in the framework of this abandoned factory. So, you know, like when King Koopa sat in his office and you can see all the street and everything outside and all the city, he's overlooking the whole city. Mm-hmm. That all exists and it's real. And all that's those crazy extras are real people, like walking around in the background. And that's why I think it's such a shame that the film is so underappreciated, because so much effort went into like all that stuff.
That's so true.
And I think part of its charm is like the, like I say, the realness of the effects and the puppetry and, you know, the costumes. And I think you're right. I think if they did it now, it would be like, you know, like in front of a green screen jumping around, you know, like, and
which,
I think,
I mean, I guess the sets kind of bring something cool to it, you know, but in the same sense, they definitely don't need that these days, you know, and I would still like it as long as it looked good, you know?
Yeah. But I think part of the charm is, like I say, is that it's real actors standing in real places that have had like love and attention and care put into them. If you know what I mean. And I think that's what I take away from it every single time. Like when that egg opens at the beginning, you know, the she gets dropped off at the orphanage and there's this huge egg and it's like a real mechanical device that like opens up. And I'm like, that's like someone built that and it was real and someone could touch it and take it to the set. You know, the tunnels are like real sets, you know. I mean, there's some early kind of digital effects stuff in there. So a couple of morphs when they jump through the portal, you know, and little things like that. But most of it is real. You know, it's them stood in real places. I mean, you know, a lot of the throne room and stuff like that, like all the tiling on the floor, like existed in the factory before they just kind of built stuff on top of it.
Which I think is crazy. I'm looking at the, you know, visual effects people and stuff. I've never heard of any of the people. It's not like they used like Rick Baker or, you know, or anybody like that, I don't think. Let me see real quick though. Who did the makeup? Wow. Okay, so I've interviewed this guy, Vincent Guastini. He did like the Golgothan in Dogma and stuff. The like shit demon in Dogma and stuff. So he worked on it. That's cool. I have to talk to him about that. Like, what was it like? But he did the prosthetic makeup on that. So that's kind of cool. So let me see. Special effects were done. Yeah, I don't know any of the people.
I mean, they've got a huge art department there. And when you watch the film, you can see why. It's because, I mean, like I say, there's so much attention to detail in it. And I think it's a real shame that it's completely overlooked because it's considered like a bad movie.
Right. No, I agree. It's like people don't look at this going, wow, how like, because that you're right. Like when I was watching it and looking at the world that they created, the Mushroom Kingdom and the Dinotopia, all that stuff, you know, even down to like doing Brooklyn, you know, which was just a simple, like, you know, just have to be on set, you know, or whatever. Right. They probably just shot in Brooklyn for a lot of that stuff, but like, it looked amazing, you know, like it was down the mushrooms themselves, you know, which I thought was interesting that they made what's his name?
Henriksen.
What?
Lance Henriksen.
Yeah, but what I don't remember, was he shown at all?
Like, so he's when the mushroom stuff turns back into the king.
Yeah, okay.
For some random reason, it's like Bishop from Aliens. Like, who he's probably, like, at the time was one of the most famous actors going. Like, so it's kind of nuts that suddenly he just kind of turns up and he's like, oh, I was all mushroomy for a minute. And that's it. That's all you see of him. Like,
yeah.
It's so weird that they chose him.
Because they could have, like, anybody could have played that role.
Yeah.
In a way.
I mean, I guess if you could go, we need someone to play the king, you get Lance Henriksen.
Yeah. You know, who's going to be the king? You know.
I guess he was the actor at the time who you went, you know, like nowadays, I suppose, if it was a low budget film, you go, who are we getting to play the king? And you go, it's probably going to be Eric Roberts in it, you know, he'll do out. And I guess like back then it was like Lance Henriksen was that guy.
Yeah. There was a scene inside the jail cell or whatever when they were in jail, and he was Mario was talking to a guy, and I was like, is this supposed to be Elvis? Like, did Elvis get kidnapped into the mushroom world? They never say anything, and I was like, that would have been a cool like thing, you know? Like, well,
they're all like they establish this a little bit more in the comic book sequel. But all the mushroom people seem to be like kind of like 50s teddy boys. You know, like, I guess they establish a little bit with Toad, who's played by a guy called Mojo Nixon.
He was great. I loved him. I loved him.
Like, weirdly too close to my name.
Right.
All those characters. Again, it's just a weird, cool design element. Like, that all the mushroom people are kind of like, you know, like rebellious kind of James Dean types, you know, and it's weird, but I like it.
It was weird. I enjoyed it too. Like, honestly, rewatching it again, it was fun. You know, it was enjoyable. I bought it and I was like, I need to watch this again. You know, this was a while ago. And I was like, I need to watch this again. And I was like, this is actually pretty damn good. You know, like, I'm surprised, like, that people, like, including myself, knocked this movie. But I think also going in, it's completely different watching it on a DVD than watching it in the theater, where you're just like, wait a minute, what is going on here? Like, why are plumbers why is there so much hate on plumbers? Give me those plumbers. Let me find those plumbers. And then he's like, and then Mario is like, what do you guys have against plumbers? You know, right?
Yeah, I guess it's also like when they arrive in like Dino World, they're like, you guys are plumbers? Like, we don't have plumbers here. Come with us. And I'm like, hang on. Like,
do they not have plumbers in Dino Land?
Yeah, because it's like when they grab them, they're like, "Yo, you guys are plumbers. Fucking King Koopa needs plumbers. Come with us." Like, so what happened to all the plumbers in Dino World? Did they go like extinct or?
They're hiding because they didn't want to get kidnapped by
maybe. King Koopa. What I did notice this time around when I was watching it, I've watched it a couple of times before we did this. The money in Dino World is coupons, but spelled like King Koopa, and oh, that slayed me. I was like, I'd never noticed it before. It's just a little detail when she rings
I
up.
I never saw that either. Now I'd have to rewatch
King
that.
King Koopa, you kind of come down here. I hear you're looking for some plumbers. Well, guess who just walked in here? And on the behind her, there's like a poster that says wanted plumbers, like 200 coupons. Like, and I was like, oh, nice. But again, just attention to detail, you know. There's
something funny that's not in the video game. I mean, you never once hear something about coupons in the video game. Now, there were coins in the video game, which I don't think they.
Well, I seem to remember on the coupons, there is a little picture of the coin next to it. So maybe I guess that's supposed to be what they are.
Right, a bunch of coins or something collected or whatever. That's interesting. I don't know. It's one of those things where they really, really tried. as hard as they can to make this as much like the game, but also as much like a movie, you know?
Yeah.
This is another...
Back in 1993, I feel like, what else could you do to turn Mario into a movie and it be good? Because I really think when people say, well, why is it not more like the games? Because it would have been terrible.
Yeah.
It would have been garbage.
What would have happened? Like, he would go into a pipe and then disappear down the pipe and then jump and collect coins all day there'd have to be somewhat of a, I mean, you know, and you look at like Mortal Kombat and you look at Street Fighter, you look at all these games that Sega did, even down to the new Sonic the Hedgehog movie, which they did a fantastic, I've actually interviewed those guys and I've actually met one of the writers of Patrick Casey, who wrote the Sonic the Hedgehog movie. You know, he, now they're doing the new Ace Ventura movie, by the way. So congratulations to them. But I watched Dorm Days with them. That was like their first thing that they ever did. And then I sought out their like other, everything else they've done. And I've been a big fan of them. And now their career has been skyrocketing, especially due to Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah. I mean, they did a great job. I mean, I've been a lifelong Sonic fan. So I've waited 26 years for that movie.
they are incredible. So I really adore, and they made probably one of the, a lot of people are saying that Sonic the Hedgehog now being so good is going to be bringing out, you know, more video game movies being made. Now, a lot of them are going to be crap, you know, I mean, we're just going to have to get ready for that, because anytime Hollywood sees something do very well, they want all of their people, like, you know, that's what happens with like comic books, you know, these are doing very well, so let's just get a bunch of, you know, everybody.
Yeah, I guess. But this could be the change, because I mean, Detective Pikachu was like, I mean, again, I have like zero attachment to Pokemon, but that, I mean, that did a very similar thing to Mario, is it just went like, what if this video game, but also Blade Runner, and you go, yeah, okay, that'd be pretty cool. And it is, you know. I think Detective Pikachu is another one of those. It's weird. They kind of get overlooked.
I haven't actually seen it yet. I think it's one of those.
I'm not a big Pokemon guy, so I don't really know that much about it.
I don't either.
I feel like it did a good job of introducing me to it, and it was fun. It was a good movie. I really enjoyed it. You know, it was very, pulls on your heartstrings at the right moment. It's got the right action at the right moments.
But just like Sonic, I mean, Sonic did the same thing where they kind of introduced Sonic into like the real world, you know, and stuff like that. And a lot of people are saying that they were kind of excited for, like, I think the ending of Sonic 1 had it where it's set up where you could go to like Sonic Land or whatever, where Sonic lives, you know, and stuff, and kind of see that world in the cartoon version, you know, so you can kind of see both worlds kind of collide into each other, you know. And I think that would be great, but I don't know. Patrick and Josh, who both wrote the original Sonic one that just came out, they're doing the sequel as well, so I'm guessing whatever they have in mind, I'm excited for, you know.
Same, absolutely. Like, you know, like I say, it was pitch perfect for me. Like, I mean, but I've always said, they could have put him standing still, you know, wiggling his finger for 90 minutes, and I would have loved it, you know.
Did you like Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik?
I loved him, and I didn't think I would, you know. I was dubious the whole time
and that was the other thing, is like, a lot of that writing, you know, was Josh and Patrick, and they wrote very well for Jim Carrey, you know, which I don't think they even knew Jim Carrey was going to play Dr. Robotnik. They probably had no, you know, when they were writing Dr. Robotnik, they weren't thinking it was going to have a huge name. They were probably thinking it was going to be somebody, but, you know, they were probably writing it Jim Carrey like, you know, hoping that Jim Carrey would sign on for it. But like, I don't think they ever knew. And I mean, I can't speak for them. I don't know if that was like already, if he was already, guarantee you wasn't already signed on. But
hard
like,
to know, isn't it?
I don't know. Who do you think would be a good Mario today? Like, who?
If well, I see cast, Bob Hoskins.
Well, he's no longer with us, so.
I know. A real shame.
We gotta think of somebody who, I mean, he was Mario, especially when you see him at the end where he has like the outfit and the hat and everything. Like, yeah, he was Mario.
What about, like, someone like Zach Galifianakis, is he called?
Maybe. I don't know. I can really. It's hard. It's hard because, like,
yeah,
you'd have to find somebody who's like.
Well, because they could just put him on, you know, they could put him on strings or whatever, couldn't they? Now, and just he could shave his beard off, so he's just got his little mustache.
Yeah,
put a little hat on him and that, and then
maybe Zach Galifianakis. I don't know.
And then I don't know who you'd get for Luigi these days.
Both, I think, would have to be Italian for sure.
Yeah. That's probably the best route to go down, really.
Especially if you're gonna go down and make it an, like, you know, if they do the same thing that they did there, which would be like take the stuff that's so great about the video game and make it, you know, expand upon that. They would definitely have to go the Italian route. So.
I mean, I think what they are doing is going the CGI cartoon route.
I know a lot of people would get on me for saying this, but I think Paul Rudd would make a great Luigi.
Oh, yes.
You know, the problem I see with that is everybody like, oh, he's Ant-Man and he's in the new Ghostbusters and he's so oversaturated now. And I'm like, thinking, there's a reason he's oversaturated because he's fucking good.
Put him in
everything if you can. I mean, I wouldn't want like Ryan Reynolds because he's like specific, you know, like he's fantastic in Deadpool, you know, because
I think
that.
Ryan Reynolds' problem is he's become like the actor who's like, hey, everybody, I'm in a movie. Like, and.
Well, I mean, that's due to Deadpool mainly.
Yeah, but I mean, Detective Pikachu has the same issue because he voices Pikachu in.
I think they mentioned Ryan Reynolds, like, or something in Detective Pikachu or something.
Well, he's in it. He does the voice of it. And I think they mention him.
Like, that's the problem. See, like, he, you know, takes you out of it when he's doing it.
Yeah, I think Ryan Reynolds has kind of fallen into this trap of, like, everything he's in now is like, hey, everybody, I'm in a movie. I'm fully aware I'm in a movie. And I think. I think that's going to become a problem for him quickly down the road, because I was watching this, the Hitman's Bodyguards, one of his newest ones, and he doesn't really do that, and he's really boring because he's not allowed to, you know, to do his shtick,
right?
That's made him popular.
And it'd be like Adam Sandler, like not being able to be Adam Sandler, which he is. Like, he did what, Uncut Gems, and I've heard a review of it where he made you feel so uneasy because it was not Adam Sandler, you know. I mean, I love Adam Sandler. I'm a huge Adam Sandler fan.
Yes,
I grew up on his films, but you know, I don't know. I'm trying to think of who. So Luigi, Paul Rudd. I don't know. I don't know if there is a Mario right now. That would be tough, man. I mean,
it would. Yeah, I think Bob Hoskins did such a good job. I think he was such perfect casting.
You'd have to find somebody who's a little fat. You know,
it's so frustrating that he didn't enjoy making the film. I think, really.
Right. It's such a shame because
he is so good, isn't he? Even if he hated it, you know, he did a great job.
Yep. I agree.
I think the big difficulty for me really is that it almost feels like blasphemous to recast Mario when he was done so well. But I mean, the world has
to
move.
You'd have to, yeah. I mean, a lot of people are making a they're making a thread right now to recast Chadwick Boseman for Black Panther and everything, which, I mean, like, I could see Marvel, you know, saying we've got enough superheroes right now. Like, we don't really need, you know, Black Panther, like, necessarily. I mean, they're about to have Blade. They're about to have other, you know, African-American. They've got the Falcon, you know. Yeah. So I can see where they're just like, we don't want to do it right now because, you know, recast them because, yeah, it's just, you know.
I was talking about this the other day. I think with Black Panther, it really is a case of, I think I'm a bit split on it because I think in terms of the character Black Panther, it's a really interesting opportunity to go, well, what can we do in terms of storytelling when we don't have the lead anymore? Like, how do we tell that story? And I think that's really interesting to see how they'll do that. But I also do think that we've had like a million Peter Parkers and Bruce Waynes and Clark Kents. And I think, like, it's unfair to go, but we're taking that black superhero character T'Challa off the table now because the first actor died. And I think that's very unfair to a whole community of actors. So I think at some point they do need to bring him back.
I know they are doing Black Panther 2 without him, yeah, without the Black Panther, which I think is a little weird. You know, I mean, why even call it Black Panther 2? Why not just call it Wakanda Forever or something? Wakanda.
In the comic books, Shuri becomes Black Panther for quite a long time. So I was always interested because I always felt like that's where it would go naturally anyway.
Right.
It feels like it's happened much sooner than they expected.
Yeah, so I think they were like out of kind of like, you know, we're going to, like, how are they going to even explain? Like, is T'Challa going to be dead? Is going to be my big question. Is he going to be?
I think so. But I mean, I guess this is what I'm talking about. It's an interesting challenge as a storyteller. And like, that's what I'm interested to see is how they cover that, you know?
Exactly. I'm excited to see it too, just because I want to see what they do necessarily. Yeah. And I think that I think Kevin Feige is probably one of the best producers right now that we have in Hollywood. You know, like, he really strikes, you know, tries to, and I've heard him talk about it. Like, he will get into like a conference room with all the writers and everything. And the big thing that they're always trying to do is figure out what's the story. Like, yeah, what's the core thing here?
He's never, ever seems to be tone deaf about these things, which is his biggest talent, I think. Is, yeah, that, like, and I think that's where a lot of these other franchises fall down. Uh-huh. They're so tone deaf, like, they don't understand what's kind of accidentally offensive or accidentally stupid. And he comes in and he can see it straight away and he knows exactly. And I mean, this is a big thing for the studio to deal with, but I think he'll deal with it perfectly,
right?
Because he does, doesn't he?
I think so too. Yeah, I think he's one of my favorite producers now, and
yeah,
and one of those things where it is sort of weird that we've come into this world right now where back when we were kids, did we know who the producers were? Did we know, like, you know what I mean? Like, we didn't know this stuff or whatever, and now kids are growing up knowing who the producers are, who the directors are, who the writers are, and everything, because they're so prominent now into the world, and into their own franchises, their own stuff.
I think it's important to know who's telling stories now, and that's really interesting, I think, you know, to go, like, we're getting a Black Panther movie, but we're also getting like it from Ryan Coogler's perspective, and that, you know, that I want to see that. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think that's much more prominent than it was. You know, well, I mean, to go back to Mario, like, I didn't find out that it was directed by like a couple until like 10 years ago.
Right.
I read it in Dennis Hopper's interview where he said how much he hated working on it, and the two directors, you know, were awful and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, right. Like, you know.
I don't remember that either. Like, I don't remember looking at it saying directed by, I don't even know who the two, do you even know who the two directors are by name? Like,
I'm not clicking on it. It's Rocky Morton and I can't remember the woman. Summer Inkle, she's called. I'll check now and see. So it was Rocky Morton and Annabelle Jankel. Were a couple at the time.
Yeah. And I heard they were fighting each other way too much, and I think
they were romantically involved at the time. You can tell when you watch the making of it because they don't really talk about each other very much, and it's hard to explain. But like, there's definitely they try tension. To not. Yeah, like they're definitely in two completely separate places when this interview is going on. You know, like so it's funny. To watch, you know, them kind of awkwardly try not to talk about each other during the making of it and stuff. But I don't know it's, but like I say, back then, no one cared.
No one cared. Yeah.
Unless you're Steven Spielberg, no one's bothered. But now, it's important to know where that perspective's coming from, I think, a lot of the time.
I mean, the internet pretty much made that a thing, you know. IMDb or, you know, whatever, like, you know, but back then we had the only people that like knew that kind of stuff were like people like Quentin Tarantino, who like that was, he got so enthralled by the movies he watched that he would like seek out other movies made by the same director, you know, but he didn't know, I don't think he even knew that he was going to become a director, you know, when he was a kid. He always thought of himself as an actor, you know, and stuff. So you look at Tarantino and he knew those things. I only knew Bill Murray, you know, or Adam Sandler or Chris Farley or whoever was the big name actor of the movies. And then maybe like when I got into my like high school years, I started knowing Ivan Reitman's name or Tim Burton or, you know, whatever, you know. Like Kevin Smith was really the one who sort of influenced me as far as writing and directing goes.
He was a massive part of what I do now. So, you know,
exactly. So I agree. Like he's a big, you know, which man, I know a lot of people don't like Kevin Smith stuff and that's fine. You know, it's about taste, but I absolutely adore his movies. So
I mean he's a great filmmaker and he's always trying something new, and I mean, you know, you have to appreciate that even if you don't like what he's doing. I think
the first one he tried something new with was Jersey Girl, in a way, like it was just, you know, let me do something different that's not Jay and Silent Bob, you know what I mean? And then
a lot of people consider that to be his best movie. Like, it's so really? Straight. I mean, in terms of looking at his overall career, I think Jersey Girl is his, possibly the, him and his most distilled, but because it's not part of like the Askew universe, like it's quite often overlooked by hardcore Kevin Smith fans. But outside of that, a lot of people view it as one of his best. I think Patrick Willems did a video essay about his career and he specifically talks about that one.
Yeah. I mean I don't know if that was the one I watched one where they're talking about Jersey Girl and how different it was for Kevin, but that he had remembered how terrible people thought it was, so that he never watched it until like recently, and then he watched it and he was like, it's not a bad movie at all, like it's a pretty good movie, blah blah blah. Yeah. I look at it as like, I watched it back in 2002, I want to say 2003, whenever it came out.
Yeah.
I think it was 2003. And, I had already gone up to Folgerthon, which was Kevin Smith's film festival in 2002. And I had met Kevin, you know, and I was a huge supporter of the Viewersk universe. and all this stuff. Like I still support everything he does. He's just one of the like most down to earth filmmakers you'll probably ever meet that's in Hollywood. You know, like I've met him twice already, and both times he's just very gracious and chats with everybody and shakes their hand, takes their picture, and he'll do the selfie with you. He'll make sure to actually, you know, take your phone out of your hand and do the selfie because he knows how to, you know what I mean? Like he's good at that, you know what I mean? So yeah. I adore him, and I'll always have a place in my heart. And say he, because I know he's doing the Masters of the Universe cartoon.
Oh yeah.
I'm excited to see that.
You know this, but I am, you can maybe just see them in the background, but I am obviously a huge Masters of the Universe fan as well.
There you go. When I do Masters of the Universe as a Hollywood Knockbusters, you'll have to be on my, on as a guest.
I mean, if Mario Bros. Is in my top 20, Masters of the Universe is in my top 10.
That's awesome.
Like, yeah. Well, it might be, I think it was maybe the second film I ever saw at the cinema.
Oh, wow.
So the first being Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, which was filmed where I live right now.
Well, it's funny crazy. Because everybody hates that movie, but that, you know, that's pretty decent.
I mean, I don't particularly like it as a film, but I have a lot of nice memories about it. It was filmed in Milton Keynes in the UK, where we live. I quite often just used to walk through all the sets that you know, all the places where they filmed a bunch of the scenes, like just on my kind of everyday journey, just because it's so nice to kind of walk through that stuff and see it, you know.
I'm trying to think if the movie I can think of that might be the first one that I know of that I saw in the theater, because I'm guarantee you I've seen other ones and I just didn't know or don't remember. The one I remember must have been Ghostbusters 2.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I remember seeing that in the theater. I remember that, you know, experience because, like, my parents letting me go see that movie in the theater after the first Ghostbusters scared me, like, half to death. And even the cartoon scared me. Now, this interesting thing is, like, the cartoon for Real Ghostbusters, there was an episode where there was a giant chicken, you know?
Oh, yeah, the were-chicken.
The were-chicken. Oh. And do you remember the eyes that the were-chicken had?
Yeah.
I would turn like evil or red and stuff. That scared me as a kid.
I'll tell you, they're replaying them on YouTube. They upload like an episode a week at the minute on the official Ghostbusters channel.
Yeah.
So I've been watching them with my cereal every morning. And they're terrifying.
Yeah.
Like genuinely really scary.
Like I could see why, like as a kid, I'd be terrified.
And if you think they're scary, extreme Ghostbusters
were more extreme
in like the 90s.
Yeah,
even scarier. They've turned it right up. It's oh man,
I used to have all the toys, you know. I still probably have some of the toys. I think they're in my studio.
Actually, I'll tell you, I've got one right here.
Oh, nice. I remember that.
My Fright Features Frankenstein.
My favorite one was the grandma or whatever, the old lady.
Granny Gruesome.
Yeah, and opened up his her jaw. I used to have that. I used to also have the firehouse as a kid. And
oh man, that's one I still need to get.
I'll have to buy. I don't know, because like they're re-releasing all these stuff, especially now that the new Ghostbusters movie is going to be coming out hopefully this year. You know, they've already like started putting out teasers for it. I mean, I'm excited because I feel like as much as I love Paul Feig, I love him to death, Freaks and Geeks and everything. I could not get into Lady Ghostbusters, you know?
I didn't hate it, but I didn't like it. It's weird because I'm such a big Ghostbusters fan. I still just do kind of watch it every now and then. Like,
I just felt like it was like a fan.
But it's not like
it was like a fan movie.
Yeah. You know? The problem with it is the Ghostbusters. I think everything else around it is really good.
Right.
But the story's fine. It's just the characters are not very well defined. And that's why it doesn't work. But all the surrounding supporting characters are really good. And so, except for maybe the bad guy, I think. He's not very interesting. But I think,
yeah,
like Chris Hemsworth and the mayor and Charles Dance, you know, they're all great characters.
Except that I hated how they used the Ghostbusters themselves, yeah, like, or the actors who played the Ghostbusters,
well,
like Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd. It just
feels like a bit of a kick in the teeth after we've waited for Ghostbusters 3 for so long.
Exactly.
And Bill Murray said, no, I'm not doing any Ghostbusters. And then as soon as Harold Ramis died, he was like, oh, I'll do this awful, awful Ghostbusters movie, though. I'll do that.
I've heard Harold and Bill did not get along very well.
Well, you know? I read a thing recently that they didn't. Nobody knew why, but when he found out that he was sick, Bill Murray went to, I think he was staying in France somewhere. He went out to where he was staying and they kind of made peace. Made me cry.
That makes me cry. Oh man, that's a good story.
But yeah, he went out there and they
booked good.
They sat and no one knows what they talked about, but they sat and talked for a long time, and
they hugged it out, you know, which is good because.
Well, apparently he turned up in this like town, this little town, and I think it was in France, and he just turned up at like a shop there and was like, "I need to find my friend Harold. Like, you know, does anybody know where he lives?"
Oh, that's
and
great.
They took him up there, and his daughter was there, and you know, it was. It's nice. It's nice to know that, you know, they didn't hate each other forever. But I'm always frustrated with him that we never got Ghostbusters 3.
Because I think it's because of their feud, because they, you know, whatever. Which is kind of a bummer, but in the same sense, like, I mean, which just sucks because, you know, one of the, you know, Stripes, you know, is fantastic. So, you know, it's the Ghostbusters team in a military movie, you know, yeah. Like that's just I want all of those guys. Like, I love those guys, you know, like I love all of this. So I was kind of bummed when I heard that, you know, that, you know, they didn't necessarily get along and that's why we didn't get Ghostbusters 3. But then again, I mean, nowadays Ghostbusters is perfect because CGI, you can do almost anything. It's not going to be practical effects like it was in the movie, which fantastic practical effects, you know, and a little animation, you know, for like the for some of the stuff, you know, like there's no way people, well, actually I guess it was practical effects for the scene with the inside the refrigerator in the first movie, you know. So, I mean, just the stuff that they could do now, just amazing.
Well, I think, yeah, again, it's always a mixture of those techniques that I think you get the best results. I mean, I am massive, you know, champion of practical effects. It's all I talk about all the time. You know, like you can see, I've even got my 1998 Godzilla sat here in the background.
Nice.
He's a puppet as well, by the way.
Did you watch the new Godzilla movie?
I did, of course.
Did you like it?
Yeah.
I love what they're doing with the MonsterVerse, you know?
I mean, you know what? It's weird because I've never really been a massive Godzilla fan. I like, you know, I watched the movies over the years. I mean, we don't have a massive kind of Godzilla culture here. Like, it wasn't like you could turn on TV at night and Godzilla would be on or whatever. Like,
that's how it is in the States. It was. It used to be in the States. You had that.
It would happen, but it was very kind of few and far between the times that you'd get Godzilla movies on TV. Mm-hmm. But I do really like the Roland Emmerich
Matthew Broderick Godzilla movie.
Yeah. I really like it. I really enjoy it. I get a lot of it. I wasn't enthused with the 2014
reboot.
Yeah. But I really like Kong Skull Island, like a lot. I think that's probably been the best one. I think I have no like affiliation with Godzilla outside of the you know, the Matthew Broderick movie and the cartoon series that they made to go with that.
The director of the new Kong and Godzilla movie is in talks, or I mean, not, I think it's not Adam just Wingard. Talks. Adam Wingard is also going to be directing the new Thundercats movie.
Oh,
so I could see, like, I mean, that to there is like a jumping stone, because, like, I mean, I'm sure you're just like me. You probably have seen Your Next and The Guest and other stuff that Adam Wingard. I mean, I remember hearing about Adam back when he did the movie. God, it was Home something. It was basically it was his first film, right? Got him. And it starred Tiffany Shepis was in it and a bunch of other people. And it was like this amazing, you know, I've heard about it. I have not seen it. I want to own it. But basically it's about a guy who comes into a party and starts killing people with a suitcase full of razor blades, you know, and stuff. Yeah. It's called Home something. God, I'm but he, you know, but then he made, you know, You're Next and
Death Note, you know, and
Blair Witch and
which were
Homesick. You know. Homesick.
Oh right, yeah. That does, I'll have to have a look through my video shelf, but I might.
Bill Moseley was the guy who came in there starts killing everybody with suitcase full of razor blades. So I really want that movie. It's really hard to find. It's like out of print. So I've got to find it, because I would love to own that movie and see it. But anyway, we talked for over an hour and a half, about like
everything. Amazing.
Not just Super Mario. We talked about a bunch of other things, but, that's just how I am anyway. So, but thank you so much. Is there anything else from Super Mario Brothers that we forgot to mention that you wanted to?
You know what? I made a little list in my mind, but I think I've covered most of it. I hate those plumbers line. I don't know why that's there, but it's funny.
That's funny. Well, I think it's for the trailer. You know, I hate those plumbers.
Yeah, maybe. But my favorite bit, and I guarantee you not many people know this even exists, is Iggy and Spike's, after the end credits of the movie, there's two Japanese guys stood in the Mario Brothers apartment, and they go, "We would like to make a video game of your many adventures." And it spins around, and it's Iggy and Spike sat there, and they're like, "We should call it like Iggy's Adventure." And he goes, "No, we'll call it the Indomitable Spike." And then they both go, "No, the Super Koopa Cousins." And it's and I love that bit. And even as a kid, I didn't know that exists, because obviously I wasn't the kind of kid who would sit and watch all the way through the credits for like every film, you know.
Well, you do realize that's why Marvel is doing the stuff where they put it, the credits, like, or those parts, like, right after like the beginning of credits or whatever, you know, now, because they know some people still leave, you know, before the credits are ending.
When I sit in a Marvel movie and people start getting up as the film finishes, I go, like, have you, like, we're 20 films in now. You should must know.
Some of them are good. Some of it makes no sense.
Oh, I love it. You know what? Even if it's terrible, I think it's hilarious. And I do. I mean, I'm at an age now where, like, that's like the 10 minutes of peace I get, you know, when everyone's leaving the cinema and I just sit for like 10 minutes just with whatever score playing from whatever I've just seen, you know, just, and I think, you know what, I'm just going to see if, even if there's nothing at the end of these credits.
Yeah, but I do that too.
This is my time now. You know, I'm having it.
I'm hoping the cinemas are opening like completely like soon.
Well, I have no idea what's going to happen here at all.
Yeah, it's COVID has really kind of fucked everything up. But you know what? I mean, if it, like, Zoom wouldn't be as big of a thing had COVID not existed. So at least something positive sort of came in. But I mean, you know, it's been sort of
loads of movies at home as well, which I quite like. So, like, I'm going to get to watch my Mortal Kombat, like, you know, in a couple of weeks. And I don't have to get up and go out or do anything. I can just sit.
On HBO Max, man. I mean,
well, we don't have that here, so we get them on, like, pay-per-view on Sky, which is annoying.
It is annoying.
Basically, we pay more, way more than you guys pay for HBO Max, but they still charge us extra money to watch them here.
That sucks. So frustrating.
But we got like Godzilla and Wonder Woman and what was the other one?
I didn't watch Wonder Woman. I was not a huge fan of the first one.
I thought it was fine.
I've talked about this on many a podcast, but I'm not into the World War II stuff, you know, like whatever, like aspect of those. Cause I wasn't a huge Captain America, the first Avenger fan, but I love Winter Soldier and I love Civil War a lot. So, but the first one, I feel like they take too much of the World War II stuff that just kind of bores me. Like it's just a time period where I'm not that enthralled with, you know? But I mean, I get it because he's Captain America and that was kind of the biggest time for that, you know, and Wonder Woman, you know, that's kind of the biggest time for her. So I would probably be more into Wonder Woman 84 because I'm more into 80s. So maybe I would be.
Well, I mean, I wasn't a massive fan of it. It's stupid. It's funny to watch, I guess. I appreciate it on a kind of different level, I think, too.
I think it bombed, too. Like, it didn't do very well. And and so I think, I don't know what that means for DC, if they're going to take a break on Wonder Woman. Or
Justice League thing, I think they'll be all right. That seems to have gone over really well. So.
Oh, with the, yeah.
The
extended cut. Yeah, so 4 hours, man. I'm not watching that. I'm sorry.
I
the first Justice League, and I can't watch 4 hours.
I mean, I seem to be in the minority, but it's not for me. It was the same, but longer, as far as I was concerned.
I'm sorry, but it did very well. Like, yeah, every one of my friends has been saying, oh my God, this is great. It's better than the original. And I'm like, anything is better than the original. I just did not like. I own it on 4K, and that's only because I'm owning all the DC movies on 4K. You know, like
I'm not a big fan of them, but they released these like nice books. It was like a Blu-ray, but it came with like a making of book as part of the thing here. And like I found one for very cheap, and then found out they did them for all the first 5 DC movies.
Right. So
I was like, oh, excellent. Now I have to collect all these.
Yeah. Wonderful. You're just like me. Yep. If you like watch, yeah, you know, there's more, you have to have it.
I've got to have the whole set. You know what I mean? Right.
I'm very much like you. I'm collecting all the Marvel. I'm collecting all the, and the Marvel, for some reason, they just went down in price for $30 to about $20.
Instead, Disney Plus came out. To be honest, I stopped buying the Marvel stuff because we got Disney Plus and like
it. I didn't realize. I thought it was because they did it like right after the stimulus checks came out in the United States. And I was like, wait, are they just like, they're like, hey, $10 off these movies because now you guys got money. You can go buy the whole you know, thing for cheaper. Maybe a little bit, but I bought like Doctor Strange and I bought the new Spider-Man. So I need to buy, I want to buy all of them. You know, I have a whole bunch of them.
I'll buy the odd one, depending on, you know, like, I guess it comes down to how much I want to watch them sooner than they're going to be on a streaming service or whatever. So, you know, I'll buy the odd one, Ragnarok and Captain Marvel, and, you know.
I have Ragnarok. I don't have Captain Marvel yet. I'm going to start going back, you know, from the very beginning, because I have Incredible Hulk, but I don't have Iron Man on 4K. So I'm going to get Iron Man and Thor on 4K, like the first ones. And then each month I'm hoping to buy 2 Marvel movies each month, you know, or whatever. And so
I think I've got them all the way up to like the second Avengers movie. And then I've got, there's a bit sporadic after that.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, man. It's been awesome chatting with you. And
yeah, we talked about
all sorts. Yeah, a lot of shit. So not just Super Mario Brothers. So hopefully people got a lot out of it. And if you guys agree, disagree, whatever you guys think, write it down below, comment, let us know what you guys think, because I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on this specific thing. This will be a video and a audio, so check that out. It'll be on the YouTube channel as well as on Podbean at indiefilmcafe.podbean.com, or check out indiefilmcafe.reviews or Sick Flick Productions. Or if you want to give us a dollar to help us all out, we got a Patreon, so patreon.com/indiefilmcafe will be awesome. Help us out and join us next month for another Hollywood Knockbusters. I can't say what it's going to be yet exactly, but trust me, when you guys find out, you guys will have a fun time. I think I'll introduce it once I'm finished with recording it. So all right, well, thank you once again, MJ. You're awesome. You know,
thanks for having me.
Yeah, and please, we'll definitely have you back on. So just stick around, and everybody else, have a good one. Bye.